The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 9, text number 14, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on September 21st, 2012, in Subang Jaya, Malaysia.
Satatam kirtayanto mangyatantascha dedhavrata namasham tascha mang bhakcha nityayukta upasate. Krishna says, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Well, that's what a great soul does. They chant, and they chant the glories of God. This is called Mahatma. You know what the opposite of Mahatma is? It is called Duratma, a rascal. So, in the eyes of God, those who chant, they are great souls, Mahatma. Those who don't chant, they are Duratma, they are rascal. That's God's vision, you see. You may say, well, he has his opinion and I have mine. That's true. God grants you your own opinion. Well, I think God is a Duratma because he wants me to chant. I mean, you know, one can think that way. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvashataham Hrijisana Vishto Mataksmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. He says, I am seated in the heart of all living entities, and from me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So you want to forget God? You say, oh, forget this Hare Krishna nonsense, you know. I want nothing to do with it. All right, Krishna will facilitate you. I give you so many things you can absorb yourself in instead of Krishna consciousness. Money, video games, you know, the internet, you name it. A million and one distractions are available right here in Malaysia for those who do not want to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. This will facilitate. You may say, well, you know, this is just another religion. I mean, there's so many religions, so many gurus, so many teachings. Why should I listen to you? Actually, I'm not giving you my word. That's the first point. I'm giving you what Krishna says. Well, why should I listen to Krishna? Actually, you should listen to Krishna, because Krishna is the supreme authority. Everything that exists is the energy of Krishna. You are the energy of Krishna also. You're his energy. It's called his separated energy. The rug you're sitting on is the energy of Krishna. This country, Malaysia, is the energy of Krishna. This planet is the energy of Krishna. The whole universe is the energy of Krishna. Krishna is pretty big person. He's powerful. He's the supreme. All the other gods are simply his energies. Shiva, Brahma, Indra, Ganesh. They're just the energies of Krishna. So you may say, well, I don't care about Krishna. All right. You want to forget God, you can do that. You have the full privilege to do it. But the difficulty is, if you do that, you're denying your own nature. You understand? A fish is meant to be in the water. You want to deny your relationship with Krishna, you're just denying your own identity. That's all you're doing. You're simply denying your own identity. All you're doing. You're simply denying your own identity. You're refusing to admit who you actually are. Now, do you think you can be happy doing that? The fish, you see, if he's honest with himself, he has to admit, I am a creature of the water. He's honest, you see. He says, no, I can see those people up on the land up there, you know, peep through my little fish eyes, and I see those people up there walking on the beach. They look like they're having more fun than we people down in the water. I like to be a land man. You see? So he makes him mad, and he just swims and tries to jump up and land. He gets up there. Wow. This is pretty. For a second, he thinks he's made it. He attained nirvana, you know. And he's in bliss. Then he can't breathe. There's no facility you can give that fish on the land that will give him happiness, because it's not his environment. So right now, we are fish out of the water. This is not our environment. We are in an artificial atmosphere. And therefore, no matter what you may achieve here, you see, no matter what you may give that fish, you may give him a nice Rolls Royce car, you see, give him a beautiful movie star wife, you see, give him so many facilities, but that fish will not be happy, because it's not his environment. So we cannot be happy here. It's impossible for us to be happy here in this material world, because this is not our home. Do you understand this? This is not our home. We are fish out of the water right now. Jalavina yena minna in Sanskrit, or Bengali. Nirvani is stated like that. Jalavina yena minna. Radharani says, if I forget Krishna, even for a moment, manamora vamadina, jalavina yena minna, Krishna vina chane mariyaya. She explains, Radharani explains like that. She says, if I forget Krishna, my impoverished mind dies immediately, like a fish out of water. That's our position, you see. We are brain dead at present moment, because we've forgotten Krishna. Our brains have become dull, very dull. Very dull brains, they're not working properly. It's called lame brains. We're a bunch of lame brains, you see. Because we've forgotten Krishna. But then Radharani, she says, Madhura, Madhura Hasha Vadane. But when I see Krishna's sweetly smiling face, Mana Netara Dasayane, my mind and my eyes become so pleased, Krishna Trishna Dvigona Vadaya, my thirst for Krishna immediately doubles. So, you want to remain in that sleep condition? What do you think? You want to remain asleep in the material existence? Would you like to remain asleep in the material existence? Or would you like to wake up to your all blissful, all knowing, all loving nature, which is never touched by any anxiety, by any fear, by anything like old age, death, disease? What would you prefer? You like getting old? You like getting sick? You like dying? You ready for it? Okay, who wants death? I don't mind dying. Okay, step forward. I have a little gun here. We're ready. Stick your head right here. We'll blow your brains out. You ready? Sure, go ahead. I don't mind. No, nobody wants to die. That's it. How about if we give you, you inject you with some disease, like Lyme disease. You heard of Lyme disease? It's carried by ticks. How would you like, we bring a tick, it's infected with Lyme disease, and have it bite you. Would you like to be infected with Lyme disease? You see, we don't want sickness. We don't. How about old age? But who wants to become an 80-year-old man? I push a little button and boom, you're 80 years old, you know. You're hard of hearing. You have arthritis. You can't walk because your knees kill you. You need a cane to get around, a wheelchair. Would you like to be an old 80-year-old man right now? You can't see, you can't hear. You have to take an enema every time you want to pass stool because you can't even evacuate anymore properly. Are you ready? Is it? That's what we're sitting in. We're sitting in a world where we're forced to get sick, to get old and die. We're forced, you see. Do you think that's a very nice thing? You say, well, this is great, man, I love it. And do you really think it's a wonderful situation you're in right now? You see? One, an intelligent man analyzes these things. A thoughtful person, a philosopher, analyzes his situation. He doesn't just get up and go to work and earn money and spend money and gratify his senses. That's an animal that does that. Simply an animal. Intelligent man analyzes, okay, who am I? What is the purpose for my existence? Why am I here? That's a human being. If you don't analyze like that, you're simply animal. You're simply two-legged animal. That's all you are. If you're not thoughtful to analyze, why, how have I come here? Why do I exist? What is the perfection of my existence? These are the questions a human being asks. So if you're sincere to actually know, to ask these questions and want to know the answers, then there is a wonderful friend you have. You have a very wonderful, perfect friend. Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. His name is Krishna. And he dwells within your heart as the Supersoul. He's been traveling with you in your transmigration of birth and death for millions and billions of lifetimes, just facilitating all of your desires to try to enjoy this material world as a bird, as a fish, as a demigod, as a bear, as a snake, as a tiger, as a king, as a pauper, whatever you wanted to try doing, as a licentious drunkard, as a pious philanthropist. And Krishna has given you full facility to try everything you want to do, to try to enjoy this material world. But he's actually, what he really wants is, when will that day come when this person will turn to me and ask, what am I doing here in this place? This doesn't seem right. There's something wrong going on here. This is not, this place is not suitable to my nature that I actually have. This material existence is not suitable to my nature. What's going on here? You see? Krishna's been waiting for you to come to that point in your evolution of consciousness. You see? Because when you reach that point, then he will, the guru within, Chaitanya Guru, Krishna, he will manifest externally in the form of the spiritual master. So he will then guide you and enlighten you who you really are and how you can actually be who you really are. Fully. Not just theoretically, but practically. In a very practical, moment by moment, in every situation. Someone asked me, why was Bhagavad Gita spoken on a battlefield of all places? Krishna wanted to show, this is practical. Even you can do this even if you're a warrior on the battlefield. That's how practical it is. In any situation, any occupation, any circumstance, you can apply the Bhagavad Gita wisdom and become spiritually perfect. This is Arjuna became spiritually perfect. So the bona fide spiritual master has realized this truth in his own personal life, you see. He's manifesting in his own life, and he teaches the disciples how to do that. As Prabhupada came to this country. He came to the Western world also, to the USA. He taught us this system. And so now, it's our duty as his disciple to pass this on to you. Because we don't want to see you in a suffering condition. I can see people, I can see by the faces who's in misery, who's blissful, who's miserable. I can just see on the face of the index of them. I can look at your faces and see how much awakened you are in spiritual life. It's very obvious in the face. How much you're still in the darkness of ignorance and how much you're awakened. So, I've come as a representative of Prabhupada to help you wake up. But you have to want to wake up. You ever try to wake somebody up who didn't want to get up? You shake them, and they won't budge. They know you're there, but they just, no, I'll come back to sleep. It's up to you to want to be woken up. If you want to sleep, what can I do? I can shake you and say, hey, chant Hare Krishna. Hey, hear this philosophy. Hey, understand these points. Come on. Come on. And you want to sleep, what can I do? You see? If you want to sleep, what can I do? Go ahead and sleep then. Have a good nap. Have a happy next birth in the material world according to your karma. What can I say? But if you actually want to get out of all miserable conditions, if you actually want to achieve unlimited success, unlimited happiness, unlimited freedom, unlimited wonder in your life, you see, then there's only one thing you need to do, and that's to become awakened spiritually. To come back to your actual identity. You're not the body. Your body is just a covering. It's not you. It's like you wearing a red shirt. You see, are you Mr. Red Shirt? No. You have a white shirt also. Do you change your identity and you change your shirt? No. So your body is also a garment, just like that red shirt. This present male body you have right now, it is simply a shirt, a garment. So you're not a male any more than you are that red shirt. You're not female any more than you are that Punjabi suit you're wearing right now, is it? This is called Brahman realization. We have to realize we're not these material bodies. We're spiritual beings, qualitatively one with God, who is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. The first step in self-realization, you have to understand, I am not this body. As long as you think you're the body, you're not going anywhere. I don't care how many times you meditate, how many yoga asanas you do, how many pranayamas you do. I don't care how many chapters of the Bhagavad Gita you read. As long as you continue to think, I am this body, you're not going anywhere. There's a nice story given in this connection by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, Prabhupada Guru Maharaj. One time in India, there was a wedding. It's like, of course, there's so many weddings in India. This particular wedding was quite normal as in the old times. And they would marry a boy from one village with a girl from another village. Even recently, one of our members in Gujarat said that was the system in Gujarat. To marry a girl from a different village. So anyway, there was an arrangement made for the wedding, two villages. So one village is a big, huge body of water you have to cross, big lake or whatever it was, to get from one village to the other village. So from the one village, all the people are coming to where the wedding is going to take place. They arrive at the boat dock late at night. The sun has just set. The boatmen have taken call of the day. They're getting ready to take rest for the night. Actually, they have taken rest. So the people wake them up. It's an emergency. We have to be in such and such a village in the morning. So you have to row us all night so we can get there. So they say, okay, if you give us some extra rupees, you know, you play the double the price in rupees, no problem, we'll do it. So they got in the boat, and the boatmen were all night rowing. And the sun rises in the morning, and villagers look and they say, what's going on, boatman? We paid you to get us there. We haven't gone anywhere yet. But you sleeping also? The boatman looked, oh my goodness, we probably got to pull the anchor in. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, he says that anchor, that anchor is bodily consciousness. As long as you think you're the body, as long as you think your happiness is the gratification of your material senses, this is my happiness, you're not going to go anywhere spiritually. You may become very advanced in the material world. You might even go all the way and become Brahmanji himself, the Lord of all the material world. But you're not going to go any, even if you go all the way to the post of Brahma, which you can, any jiva can do that. A jiva can actually become Brahmaji, the demigod of the whole material world, whole material universe, I mean to say. Each universe has its own Brahma. You can become the Brahma of a universe, this universe or one of the other universes, if you don't like this one. It's not good enough for you. You can have other universes too. You can become Brahma, but as long as you're connected to the false idea that you're the body and your happiness is the gratification of your material senses, you go nowhere. You remain caught up in this material existence. Therefore, the Vaishnavas, the spiritual master, they cut. Sadhu means one who cuts. So what does he cut with? The short of Vedic knowledge. He cuts to the short of Vedic, the hard knot in the heart, you see, the bodily consciousness. He cuts that knot in the heart to bring you out of your false conception of bodily consciousness. That is the kindness. Some people say, oh, this, the guru is too heavy for me. I can't handle this. It's going to get out of here. This is too heavy. Well, open heart surgery is pretty heavy. That's just the way it works, you know. If you have cancer, it's going to be heavy. If you have that cancer cut out, it's heavy. Actually, the Sanskrit word guru means heavy. So the guru isn't heavy. He's not really a guru if he's light, you know. He just, you know, he twirls a lotus flower in his hands. He has a nice beard and long hair. And he quotes some nice poetry. Everybody goes, oh, Gujari, Guruji is so advanced. But he's not heavy. He doesn't cut through the hard knot. He's lagu. He's light. He's not guru. He's focused. The genuine spiritual master means he is heavy. He is weighty with Vedic knowledge. And he uses that knowledge as a scalpel, a sharpened scalpel to cut through the dirt in the heart, cut through the hard knot in the heart, and awaken the living being. So do you want to wake up spiritually? Or do you want to sleep? I'm asking you in the back. Behind you. Do you want to wake up spiritually or you want to sleep? You like to be awakened spiritually? Huh? Okay, good. That's very good. Can I come here tonight to wake you up? So I hope you... that's good. Because if you want to remain asleep, and I shouldn't waste my time. But if you really, you know... trying to wake you up. But if you want to be awakened, then I feel encouraged. Well, my trip coming all the way across town tonight is worth it, because I came here to wake you up. And if you like to be wakened up, it's very good. And we have a good combination. You see, the waker and the one who wants to be awakened. You see, there has to be that combination. Even when a husband and wife get together, you see, they have a child, they both have to be potent. The husband has to be potent, the wife has to be potent, then there will be child. If either the husband or the wife is not potent, no child, you see. So the guru has to be potent. He has to be a genuine guru, bringing the genuine Vedic knowledge. And the listener also must be genuine. But yes, I want to be awakened. So if you have the bona fide guru who's speaking the Vedic knowledge, and you have the person who, yes, I want to be awakened, then what will be the result? Spiritual enlightenment, you see. Spiritual alignment will be with them. So maybe there's some questions now. I can try to answer them. I see someone is writing questions. Pass the questions forward now. Okay. Why did God create us to face various tribulations? So the question is, God some kind of a sadistic person who likes to inflict misery upon people? That's the question. Does he have some kind of a, you know, mean nasty side to him? He likes to make people suffer. Ha 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 ha. You see, like that. Like some sadistic person who tortures someone and laughs. Is that God's nature? God, actually, the act of creation of us is not something that happened in time, because we, just as God is timeless, we are also timeless. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 2:12 says, "Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. Nor in the future shall there ever be a time when we will cease to be." So it's not that at some point in history you did not exist and God created you. You have existed eternally, just as God has existed eternally. The difference is, He is the emanator and you are the, and myself included, we are the emanated. God is eternally emanating us from Himself. For what purpose? Well, how many parents do we have here in the room tonight? Let's see, any parents here in the home? There's one, two. Why do parents have kids? Because it makes more loving relationships. Chanakya Pandit says, a home without children is like a desert. So, and there's more rasa. More loving rasa. It increases the loving rasa when there's more people in the house. It's like if I give a lecture to one person, or I give a lecture to a whole room full of people, it's sweeter, it's more enlivening as a speaker. If I have 50 people hearing, or I go to Pune, I have 1,000 people hearing my lecture at one shot. Or I write in my thought for the day, it goes out to 13,000, almost 14,000 people, you see. The more there are people there, the more it becomes enlivening. And that's a fact. So God is the supreme enjoyer, and since He's Atmaram, He could enjoy being alone if He wanted to be. But since He's the supreme powerful, He can do whatever He wants. He chooses of His own volition to manifest from Himself. How many living entities? An infinite number of living entities to enjoy an infinite number of life and relationships with these infinite number of living beings. You say, well, why so many? I mean, wouldn't it be a little too much to manage? But for God, it's no problem, is it? Okay, let's say we're having a feast. Come on over to our house, we're having a feast tonight. And you say, okay, sit down, we're going to serve out the feast. And you come and you put some rice on my plate. You say, well, it looks like pretty good rice now. And you wait for the bread. Where's the rest of the preps? I heard there was a feast tonight. Well, this is the feast. Rice on just one prep for the feast. So, is that a feast or is that not a feast? It's not a feast. The feast means many, many preps. In fact, the more there are preps, the more it's a feast. So, each living entity is like a prep for God, you see. He enjoys having rasa with that living entity. So, God is having the ultimate love feast. And that's us. Not that He's eating us, but He's enjoying a loving relationship with us. So, that's why God is eternally emanating us from Himself. Why don't you move here so I can see you without having bending around the corner. Yeah. Anybody else behind that? Yeah, you also. Come right here. I want everybody to... Yeah. I'm going to see if you're sleeping back there. I have to keep an eye on everybody and make sure you're not sleeping. If your mind is wandering away, I can see that too. You know, I can grab your mind and bring it back. So, God has created us for the purpose of loving rasa. Or He is eternally emanating us for the purpose of having loving relationship with each and every one of us. So, what does this mean? It means if you do not have a loving relationship with God, you are denying Him what He wants. And therefore, you can't be happy. It's impossible to be happy if you don't love God. Okay, how do you understand there is life after death? Well, just go ahead. When you die, you'll understand it fully well. Simple thing. How to become or achieve deathlessness. To become deathless, you have to become initiated by a bona fide spiritual master. That's all. The spiritual master, when you're the time of initiation, He, by his potency, is actually Krishna's potency acting through the spiritual master. The spiritual master liberates you. Now, this is if you take your vows seriously and you don't ever break them. If you break them, you ruin the whole thing, you see. But when you get initiated and you follow your initiation vow, Prabhupada says your deathlessness begins from the very day of initiation. Actually, the very moment when he hands you the beads and he gives you your name, you've actually at that moment entered into deathlessness. If you keep the vows strictly. How does Lord Krishna help us in our spiritual life? In an unlimited number of ways. In a visit to Mayapur, I noted that Lord Shiva is recognized in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's home and also in the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. Lord Shiva is also recognized as the greatest Vaishnava, yet we don't celebrate Shiva Ratri, recognize him except as Sri Advaita and ISKCON. Could Gurudev please help us understand this? It's very simple. Prabhupada is the answer. That's how he got it. And we follow. It's like a little duck follows a mother duck. Prabhupada's the mother duck, and we're the duckling. That's how we know everything. We just follow exactly what Prabhupada trained us to do, because we know that's how we'll become cured. Why did the doctor give this kind of prescription? I went to the pharmacy, the prescription drug department, see there's thousands of drugs back there. If I say, well, why did the doctor give me this prescription? Well, why don't you just take the medicine? Instead of worrying about why the doctor gave me this prescription. Because you do it, you become cured. If you say, well, I'm not going to take this prescription until I can understand exactly why the doctor gave me this particular medicine and not another type of medicine. You're never going to get cured. Have faith in the doctor, take the prescription, and be cured. Prabhupada said, this is what Prabhupada told us what to do. You see, that's all. We just do what Prabhupada told us to do. This is how to properly relate with Lord Shiva. My godbrother told me that actually Prabhupada had an asana made for Lord Shiva at our Berry Place temple. Because Lord Shiva was coming to hear the kirtans. And Prabhupada had an asana made for Lord Shiva in the Berry Place temple in London, our first temple in London. But that's not a standard for every temple. That was for that particular situation. So it's not that we don't have a relationship with Lord Shiva. We do. But we worship him in a certain way, and we honor him in a certain way, exactly as taught to us by Srila Prabhupada. Because that's the proper thing for us to do, to awaken our love for Krishna. If you concoct your own new program, well, you're not accepting the doctor's prescription, and don't expect to get cured, that's all I can say. How to spiritually awaken children? Well, you have to be spiritually, you want to wake somebody up, you got to be woke up first. Yad yadatarite shrestas tattare vetarojana sayat prananam kurute lokatadanivartite. Whatever a great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, text number 21. So, you want to wake up your kids? Why only your kids? Why not say how to wake up the whole world? That's my program, you see. Prabhupada told us to live with the whole world. You may think you're waking up your whole kids. I'm thinking how we can wake up the whole world. The same answer for both questions. It's the same principle. How to wake up your kids? How to wake up the whole world? You have to become an acharya. You have to become an ideal example of Krishna consciousness, and then they will automatically follow you. If you say, my dear son, you must become a pure devotee of Krishna while you maintain your own material desires, you're like the teacher who said, okay students, don't smoke, it's bad for you. You shouldn't smoke. You see? If you want to be like that, well, you have to surrender to Krishna. Why don't you surrender, mom and dad? You want the kiddies to surrender? Why aren't you surrendered? It's like I've seen parents, they bring their little children, they say, okay, they have them bow down to me, you know, bow down to Gurudev, you know, they have a kid. The parents don't bow down. They just force the kid to bow down by pushing them down to the floor. That's not the way. If you want the child to bow down to the spiritual master, you bow down and have the whole family bow down together to the spiritual master. You see, that's the way. They know they want it sometime in the future when they're older. How to motivate them in the future? Now, forget that. If you can't motivate them now, you're not going to be able to motivate them. Trust no future, however pleasant. The more you postpone surrender, the harder it gets. The earlier, the better. The little child has a much better learning capacity than an adult. They say, "Well, don't make the kids sit and hear the lecture. They can't even understand the language yet. They're just little babies. No, just let them, you know." Or just let them run around in some other room, you know, do some coloring books or something. You don't want the kids sitting in the lecture. No, it's completely bogus understanding. The child can learn much better than faster than we do. We saw a 3-year-old child whose father brought to every lecture from the very babyhood. Even they put prasadam in his mouth so he wouldn't cry during the lecture. From the very babyhood. He was going every day for Bhagavatam class and every Sunday. By the time he was 3, he was spontaneously quoting Bhagavad Gita verses, not as a kiddie's recitation, but to make philosophical points, explaining different aspects of our philosophy at the age of 3. Now we're very happy for Janmashtami. If you had the kiddies chant a chapter of Bhagavad Gita, they know what it means? No. They do it like parrots. It's like in Tabayuni, there's one parrot in the back of the house. He goes, "Aribo, Aribo, Aribo." You ask him what it means. He doesn't know what it means. He just knows that if he goes out, they'll feed him. You see. So simply teaching the kids to chant a few slokas, you haven't really helped them spiritually. I mean, a little bit, of course, but you haven't really brought them to the spiritual platform. When they actually can recite verses to explain philosophical points to you, then you know. See, this kid was not taught to memorize any verses. He memorized verses just by hearing them in the class. At 3, is it? So, engage your children to hear. Whenever there's a lecture, sit them down and teach them to hear. Don't let them run and play. They're little, keep them in your lap. Bounce them up and down. If you have to put some prasadam in their mouth, even in front of the deities, it's okay. The deities will understand. It's okay. That's authorized by me. I authorize it. Tell them Sankarsana Prabhu said I could. They want to complain to me. You're having your students feed their children in front of the deities. Let them come and complain to me. Because these somehow get the child to sit and hear the lectures. It's a very, very important thing. Let them get a taste for transcendental knowledge so they're eager to hear about Krishna. Because actually these topics are more relishable. I saw one little child. We visited their home and I sat down on the couch in the living room. The child threw a temper tantrum. When I sat down on the couch, I went, "What is going on? The kid throwing a temper tantrum?" It turned out that was a spot where he watched Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner, the cartoons. That was his TV watching asana. And I sat down on his TV watching asana. I committed the asana aparad. So, you see, these are mindless things that turn their brains into noodles, actually, these cartoons. So you want to make your kids Krishna conscious? Get rid of your television set, is the first thing. And engage these children in hearing kirtan, hearing lectures, have regular kirtan in the home, read from Prabhupada's books regularly in the home. In this way, let the child get a taste for hearing transcendental knowledge, just like Prahlad Maharaj heard within the womb of his mother, you see, and came out and enlightened soul. Shukadeva Goswami also came out and enlightened soul in the womb of the mother. Let them hear transcendental knowledge. Then they put a television set in front of them. They'll say, get that out of here. Don't disturb my mind with that garbage. You see, this is how you have to train your children. Make them, you become acharya, and they will become acharyas automatically. Is Krishna a god or a manifestation of God? Krishna is God. He is the source of everything. Prayers are important, but if we chant and pray every day, who's going to run the world? Try to remember Arjuna. He was of the princely order, the administrative order. A Vaishnava. Actually, tomorrow's thought for the day is dealing with this whole thing. You see, a devotee does inner cultivation. He cultivates his inner self by chanting, reading, praying, worshipping, etc. But at the same time, he acts externally as well in this material world as an ideal citizen, you see, offering everything in the service of the Lord. So this idea that you can only chant and pray, you can't run the world, this is a misconception. It's like somebody thinks you can only play mridanga with one hand, you can't coordinate two hands, you see. They say, I can understand beating alone, but having to coordinate two different hands and get a... They say, that's impossible. How can I do that? All you have to do is go to Madanga teacher, and he'll show you how you can... This hand can do this, this hand can be doing this, and you can make a beautiful concert, you see. So, don't think that you can only chant and pray and you can't rule the world. That's like saying you can only play one end of Madanga at a time. No, you can play both ends. You see, a pure devotee can rule the whole world. Pariksha Maharaj was a pure devotee. He ruled the whole world at the same time. He was perfect in the mood of prayer at the same time. They can be done simultaneously. You see, you can be in any profession, a doctor, a lawyer, airline pilot, you see. You can be in any profession and become a pure devotee of Krishna, connecting with the Lord within your heart at every minute. It's like they just think of they're playing the mridanga, you see. It's not that you can only be a professional and you can't be a realized devotee. No, you can be a realized devotee and a professional. In fact, the more you realize Krishna, the better you will be in the material world, the more expert you be in whatever your occupation is. The more you're Krishna conscious, the more you become expert. Because one of the 26 qualities of Vaishnava is he is expert. Why expert? Because ultimately Krishna is there. Everything is his energy. Whatever you're doing in the material world, you're dealing with Krishna's energy. So if you can actually see Krishna is there within everything and everything was in Krishna, then you have a perfect understanding of how the energy works. The materialistic person, he may appear to be expert, but actually there's no materialistic person who's expert. None of them are actually expert. Because they don't fully understand how the energy is working. There are no experts in the material world. The only expert person is a Vaishnava. He's the only expert. Because he sees how the energy of Krishna is working in everything. So he can run the whole world. He can be the king, the emperor of the entire planet. Actually, in the Vedic times, they were the emperor of the whole universe. They were so powerful, so expert. They were great, they were realized devotees. How do you rid yourself of bodily consciousness, performing your secular duties, a family job, and so on? By always acting as a humble servant of Krishna and of everyone, by connecting them with Krishna. We are created for God's enjoyment. Is it permitted to have a loving relationship, enjoyment independent of God? It's impossible to do that, actually. You can't. It's impossible to have a loving relationship independently of God. Any such relationship is simply lust masquerading as love. You cannot have a loving relationship outside of a loving relationship with God. It's impossible. It's like trying to water the tree without watering the root. It's like trying to feed your body without feeding the belly. Say, I like to nourish my hand. Can I nourish my hand without feeding the stomach? No. Take the rice, squeeze it in your fingers, see how much nourishment your skin's going to get from this, by squeezing the rice in your fingers. It's impossible. So it's not possible to have a loving relationship independent of loving God. You'll never be able to do it. It'd be you're fooling yourself and you're fooling others if you think you're doing it. You can't do it. It's impossible. Who invented religions? Man invented religions. Who invented religion? God invented religion. Man invented religions. Because religion is one. You see, love God. It's one religion. But man has, in a political consciousness, man has divided it into this religion, that religion, and then fight. You see, that is simply politics. Religions is the politicization of religion, if you can understand my point. When the pure religion was politicized, it became religions. When politics entered into it, it became religions. But religion is one. Is the earth the only material world? No, there are many planets in this universe. They all have living entities. Every single living planet in this universe is inhabited. And there are other universes as well. We live in the material world that makes us grow old and eventually die. That's the cycle of life in which we have to accept. I believe in all religions that believe in God. Why we believe in Krishna? Only when other religions also believe in God and shows with the righteous moral values. We don't say only Krishna. God has unlimited names. Whether you call him Allah or Jehovah, God is one. We Krishnites accept the validity of every single religious system in the world. The other people don't. That's the difference. We accept the validity of Islam, the validity of Christianity, to the extent that they are valid. They are also invalid in many ways, because they have politicized it. But we Krishnites are not sectarianists. We accept the validity of every single, we accept what is valid in every single religious system throughout the entire history of the universe. We accept all of them. Is exercise somehow connected to being spiritually advanced? No. It's good for the health. And that's, and health is good for our spiritual advancement. So indirectly you can say, if you're healthy, if you exercise, you'll be healthy. And if you're healthy, your body won't interfere so much with your spiritual enlightenment. So indirectly you can say yes, but directly no. What is human ignorance that creeped into other religions? Well, first of all, there is no such thing as other religions, really. Religion is one. The ignorance that creeped into religion becoming religions, not other religions. That statement itself is ignorance. To say other religions, that statement is ignorance. What is the ignorance that polluted religion and turned it into many religions? It's bodily consciousness, the lording it over mentality. This is the Brahman. I heard one of your lectures on the internet. You said that God wants us to be good Christians, Muslims, Sikhs, Buddhists, Jews, etc. Why is it we talk only about Krishna? Because Krishna is the most perfect name. God, Christians may say Jehovah, Muslims, Allah, Sikhs, Buddhists. The name of Krishna is the perfect, the supreme name for God, because it includes all the other names of God within Him. Therefore, we prefer to talk about Krishna. How do we say other life forms such as animals, give them prasadam, let them hear kirtan, that will accelerate their evolution to the human form from in which they can then become pure and go back to Godhead. Is Earth the center of the universe? Yes, it is, according to Vedic astrology. Who can I worship? Lakshmi Narayan or Radha Krishna? Worship both of them. There's no harm. But understand that actually Radha and Krishna are the original and Lakshmi Narayan are the energy. Being an adolescent and student, how can we take Krishna consciousness seriously? A young person thinks that, you know, they'll become happy by growing up and achieving this and that in the material world. This is an illusion. It's like the carrot in front of the donkey. I'll be happy by getting my, you know, when I'm in high school, I'll be happy when I get to college. When I get to in college, I'll be happy when I graduate and get my job. It's like this illusion. This is the carrot being dangled in front of you. Actually, the donkey never gets the carrot. So you're never going to be, you have to realize you're never going to be happy in the material world. The only thing that can make you happy is Krishna consciousness. Why do our scriptures have example of multiple husbands of Draupadi and the Pandavas? And Krishna with 1,008 wives. Well, Draupadi's case, it's the mother's word. The mother's word, mother is worshipable. The mother, in Vedic culture, mother is Prabhu. Now there's a controversy in ISKCON, are the ladies Prabhus or are they Matajis? They are Matajis. But Matajis are Prabhus also. That's why, because Mataji is Prabhu, that's why when Kunti said, whatever you have brought, share it with your brothers. Because Mataji was Prabhu, therefore they obeyed mother's word, you see. Because Mataji is also Prabhu. She is master, you see. And Krishna with 1,008 wives. Why only 1,008? 16,108. Why only 16,108? Some say, why Krishna is immoral having so many girlfriends? They don't say. But actually, it is your immorality, sir. Krishna is the source of everything. Every woman, therefore, is his property. Every woman is Krishna's property. So, this 16,108 is only a sample of what actually Krishna possesses. So you're thinking, your wife, you are the rascal. You're claiming that woman is your property, therefore you are a rascal, you see. That woman is the property of Krishna. So in this way, we have to understand things as they are. So, we've run out of the questions, and that means it's a good stopping point. And I'm glad some of you finally made it. Better late than never. Thank you very much. And so I very much appreciate you all. You've all come tonight, and now we can end the lecture, and everybody can get some prasadam. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.